This is a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. I'm your host, Gary McGraw, CTO of Cigital and author of Software Security. This podcast series is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine. For more, see www.computer.org/security and www.cigital.com/silverbullet. This is the 27th in a series of interviews with security gurus, and I'm very pleased to have with me today Gunnar Peterson. Hi, Gunnar.
Hello, Gary.
Gunnar is a well-known software security expert and a managing principal at Arctech Group, a Minneapolis-based consulting firm. His work centers around SOA, Web 2.0, and other distributed systems. Gunnar has a blog at onerainddrop.typepad.com. You can find the link on the Silver Bullet webpage, which is often devoted to topics in software security. He also edits the Build Security In column for IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine with John Stephen from Cigital. He's not a personal trainer of any sort, regardless of Google hits to the contrary. So first we'll start with a deceptively easy question. What is security?
Oh boy, that is a deceptively easy question. What is security? From a technical perspective, I guess we've all been trained by Dan Gear to say that security is really risk management. And so we want to enable the business to do what it wants to do. And we don't want to spend $11 to protect something that's worth $10. And at the same time that we don't want to spend too much on security, we want to make sure we're spending security dollars in the right place. So I would say that security, like Dan said in his famous speech 10 years ago now, that security is about risk management. And that, you know, perfect security, especially in the world that I work in, and enterprise security is never going to exist. But we can certainly strive towards making systems more robust and more resilient.
So there are a lot of people, I guess, in your particular subdomain, so a Web 2.0 I'm thinking of, who think of security as a set of features or functions or a thing. What is wrong with approaching security that way?
Well, what's wrong with that is that security is not something that is done in a point scenario. It's something that's a system-level property, typically. So you have a bit of customer data, and it's in a bunch of databases and mainframes and ERP systems. But unless you protect it from an end-to-end standpoint, all the different places it traverses, you know, it leaves any individual given policy domain pretty quickly, especially in the world of SOA, where the whole goal is to integrate across silos. So the problem with approaching it as a set of features is that you miss that end-to-end context. And if you have a red security domain and a blue security domain, you pretty quickly have something that becomes purple at runtime, and that's a bad thing.
We all know purple is bad.
Yeah, the anti-purple security model. Now, the one thing I would say is when you package everything up and engineer it down to the point that it's ready to be deployed, it may look like a feature when you want to get ready to build it into the system from a developer viewpoint. But the thinking, the logical design thinking, has to extend beyond just a feature by feature standpoint. It has to look at it from a system view.
Right. So you've been working for many years with web-based systems, and I guess you've really developed your brand around SOA and Web 2.0. How do you think things are going in the Web 2.0 security space these days?
I tend to see them as different spaces, although that might be because I'm too close to it to think of them as the same thing from a larger industry standpoint.
Well, go ahead and untangle them if you want. That's fine.
Well, I would say that the SOA folks tend to be more of the enterprise folks. So you get more of your Fortune 500 people, people that probably think that a combination of things they can buy from vendors like IBM and Oracle and Microsoft can solve their problem. And I'm not throwing those companies under the bus. I'm just saying that it's more of an enterprise mindset. Mm-hmm. So something you buy and or consulting services you buy to solve your problem, mm-hmm. Would be sort of how I would characterize the SOA space. Not that there aren't lots of individuals in these big companies doing really impressive things.
And Web 2.0 would be?
Web 2.0, I think, is more of a bottom-up grassroots movement. And in that case, I think people are more into, you know, writing the code. Certainly, I don't think people assume going in they're going to go buy a Web 2.0 solution from IBM, whereas you can go to IBM and buy three different enterprise service buses to build out your SOA.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a different starting point.
Explain what's going on in each one of those places with security.
Well, I think, and maybe this is where your question is leading, I think a lot of the problems you end up having to solve are pretty much the same, even though the starting points are different. And a lot of the, in my opinion, a lot of the tough problems to solve revolve around, they both want to integrate data. So in a SOA world, we're going to, you know, put stuff on SOAP web services into XML documents. We're going to route them around on an enterprise service bus and hook SAP and Siebel and PeopleSoft and all these wonderful back-end systems together. And then in a Web 2.0 world, we're going to have mashups, and we're going to have data coming from all kinds of different places, mash them up in a nice little AJAX screen inside of a browser, and it will all work together at runtime. And that's sort of the goals of both of those.
Yeah, it sounds like lots of data exposure no matter which way you slice it.
Yeah, but I think the subtle differences are that in a Web 2.0 world, that mashup is really governed by what does the user want.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I want my Google Finance page to look or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in a SOA case, we may have a SOA behind our Web 2.0, but the SOA case is really driven, I'd say, more by business process. So company A bought company B, and they really need their claim system or mortgage processing system to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And so the unifying construct there is probably more something like a business document or business process.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's still, you've got different policy domains, different data owners, different technologies, and so there's sort of this missing security construct, which is how do we do security at a message document level, for example, through XML security or something like that.
Right, and I guess in the early days of SOA, the idea was to use the WS glob functionality to...
And I think that either
protect or glob together or something like that, which harkens back to the earlier question I asked about, you know, is security a thing? Because that seems to be implicitly saying, yes, it is.
Well, if we think of, I guess how I would tend to think of security is as a set of services. And those set of services is some kind of mix of, I guess what Butler Lampson calls the gold standard of information security,
mm-hmm.
authentication, authorization, and auditing. It's
right.
called the gold standard because they all start with AU. little periodic table of elements humor there for you.
Yeah, we're groaning over here on that one.
and so you're sort of delivering something along those lines or something along the lines of confidentiality, integrity, and so the classic CIA view of the world.
Right.
And the idea would be that message that's traversing those policy domains would give you the primitives that you could make an authentication decision, an authorization decision, that it would have some level of confidentiality and integrity to protect it when it traverses those policy domains. And I think the key thing that we think about in these domains and with these technologies that's different from, let's say, the classic role-based access control world. In a classic role-based access control world, we would assume we have control of the subject, we have control of the object, and we have control of the session. And so we really own both ends of the pipe.
Mm-hmm.
We own the session. We know the role of the person or the organization that's playing. In a SOA, especially, and also in a Web 2.0 world, we probably know almost none of those things.
Right.
And yet we still have to make these security decisions. So what WS Star, WS Security, and SAML, which is another spec, do is they don't make decisions like that. What they do is they give you primitives to help you make those decisions, and they package them up in something called a claim. And so... a claim is a way to attach a token to a message, And then that claim actually has to be evaluated on the endpoint. So it's not this Newtonian universe of role-based access control where I have this, you know, one concept of time and time is always going to be set to X.
Yep.
It's much more of an Einstein universe view of the world where I'm going to make a claim about a message and then you are going to have to evaluate it locally and decide what you want to do.
And we all know how that goes.
Yeah.
So a lot of security people whine that we haven't even secured Web 1.0 apps yet, and now we're moving on to Web 3.0. And by the way, thanks for your help with that Inform IT article on that stuff. Do you think we're doing anything right? Are we moving forward, or are we just kind of, you know, solving the problem badly as it evolves?
Well, I think that's a good question. I would agree. I would be in the group that we have not solved the Web 1.0 problems whatsoever. And I think if you look at the OWASP guide as being around 300 pages or something right now, and how much of that's actually being implemented in the real world, probably tells you all you need to know about the gaps in Web 1.0.
Uh-huh.
And the problems like we've been describing here become much, much worse when you mix the red policy domain with the blue policy domain.
Oh, there's that purple again.
Yeah. And so I think that actually there is the possibility. The one thing the WS Star has given us and SAML has given us is a set of security mechanisms and standards that work at the data level. So in that standpoint, I think we actually are beyond capability-wise. We're beyond where we were.
Mm-hmm.
Still needs to be baked into the infrastructure. You know, so really good support for WS security and a lot of the standards built on top of that. In WebSphere, if you want to look at IBM as the bellwether of the industry, which mm-hmm. probably is about as good a fulcrum as we have, that really came with this WebSphere 6.1.1 web service feature pack, which isn't that old. I think it's a year old or even less.
Mm-hmm.
So this stuff still has to get baked into the infrastructure. Developers need to be trained. Architects need to think about things beyond just saying, you know, we're inside the firewall, so we're cool, for it all really to work. So there's sort of this notion of a race against whatever the attacker community keeps coming up with. But I do think that the ability to apply security at a data level is going to be fundamental going forward to solving any of these problems.
So, and I guess part of the answer there is this notion that you talk about a fair amount, federated identity.
Right. So federated identity would be another building block. And in the simplest way, you know, being able to port identity assertions from the red domain to the blue domain without it ever becoming purple would be the goal there.
We are just slamming purple today.
Well, you know, since we have no visual aids, I thought I'd use as many colors as possible.
Okay, so explain very briefly what the idea behind federated identity is then, and why it matters. I guess you've sort of done that.
I'd say the biggest single reason why it matters is it's a technical solution to that maps directly to the way almost every single business actually does business in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And so as opposed to a 100-page policy on authentication and authorization that leads you down a rabbit hole that says you need to own the subject, object, and session, the federated identity approach says that it's a relationship between an identity provider and a service provider, and that we have a way, again, through message-level security, to sign and encrypt our credentials, pass them across a potentially untrusted system, and do business together. And, you know, that's how your mortgage gets processed. That's how you can use an ATM machine in the Bahamas or in Norway, and your bank knows how much to take out.
I guess that's how your foreclosure papers go.
And you can be foreclosed upon, which the banks probably don't want to do. But
they're doing plenty of it these days.
There has to be a way for all of those pieces to work together, and there has to be some level of confidence in the system. And I guess the best thing about it is that it gets us out of this business of having people randomly go into web browsers and type their username and password into something that's going to traverse an untrusted system.
So who's leading in the space in terms of vendors or technology stacks?
From a big company standpoint, Microsoft has clearly, through Kim Cameron's work and his work with the identity blog and the laws of identity and defining the identity meta system, clearly been the leader from a big company standpoint. I think when I picked up the Linux Journal about 2 years ago and saw the face of the chief architect for identity from Microsoft on the cover of the Linux Journal, I almost fell over. Yeah. But it's a real watershed moment in terms of standard support, openly embracing Java and PHP and so on, implementations of these identity technologies, and recognizing the only way federation will work is if all of these parties are able to interoperate.
Mm-hmm.
From a small company, you know, innovative standpoint, Ping Identity is another company that I've worked with a number of times that's really leading the charge in terms of innovating in ways to really push these technologies, make them simpler and easier to use, and be able to deploy this stuff really, really quickly, which I would not underestimate in any of these new technologies, some of the engineering work that needs to go into them.
Right.
And Ping has been the leader in the usability space, I would say.
So I guess what worries me about the whole idea is that it's all built on top of the Bell-LaPadula conception of a matrix, it seems. And the matrix is just so damn big these days that even if you federate it with everybody, it just gets bigger, right? And I'm wondering if there's some sort of alternative on the horizon, or whether the federated identity guys are thinking about that, or if it's just too far out.
Well, I think the thing that's really valuable that they've done is they've separated the authentication logic from the authorization logic. And so while this might manifest itself and could easily manifest itself in very complex matrices, it buys you a lot of architectural benefits, not the least of which is being able to authenticate locally, say on a laptop,
mm-hmm.
And then do your authorization, you know, somewhere closer to the mainframe,
right,
or the resource side.
Right. So that untangling is helpful.
And the other thing that it buys you is it doesn't necessarily require that you use any specific model although people frequently do, but in the simplest case, it can be just agreeing upon a simple attribute name value pair. And so that allows you, you know, quite a lot of flexibility to invent or use whatever access control model. If you like Clark Wilson better, then here's your attributes to do that on the authorization side, and have a nice day.
Right. So you've been applying these ideas actually in the field with large enterprises for many years. And you're a pretty technical guy too. So what kind of advice do you have for a technical software security type who wants to become a consultant?
Let's see. I think it's always easier if you have to understand where you're starting from. So if you're starting from the software side, you need to learn a lot about security. And if you're starting from the security side, you have to learn a mountain of stuff about software. In fact, I think it's easier to come from the software side, which is how I came from, and learn what you need to know about security.
Well, imagine that you're already a software security person and you want to be a consultant. What do you do then?
Well, the single best consulting book I've ever read is all the old Gerald Weinberg stuff.
Uh-huh. Oh, you cite him all the time in your blog.
Yeah, and he just has, it's a lot of it very homespun wisdom. And, you know, I think it just comes down to listening to your clients and really putting yourself in their shoes. And so understanding the people I learned the most from are the people in the trenches that are the ones holding the flaming bag. And
that doesn't sound like a good thing to hold.
Well, it's not. Let's say you're some architect at a big company. You've been working there 10 years. You got a good reputation. You deployed a lot of stuff, and then one day someone says, "And you own the software security problem. Go fix this."
Right.
You know, here's 5,000 applications, and you know the first thing I do is have them read, you know, Ross Anderson's book, read your books, and go from there. But at the same time, you know, they have to go and craft some kind of message
mm-hmm.
to you know, the thousands and thousands of developers, and it bloody well better work, and it bloody well better not cost the company an arm and a leg and so on and so forth. So it's a daunting challenge, and I always try as a consultant to put myself in the shoes of the person who has to carry out these things and understand. I guess the one-word answer I'd look for to your question is try to find some solution that's cost-effective.
That was a lot of words for
one
word.
Yeah, that's a one-word answer.
I can think of
that's
two,
why I'm a consultant.
I can think of a two-word solution, asbestos glove. So it looks like you're going to go to Metricon again soon. I was just at this thing called CIFMA in New York and talked to Phil Venables and John Vitale about metrics. And they said that they've given up on financial measures outside of, say, high, medium, low risk, right? And they're more focused on measuring controls. Have you seen any evidence of that in the Metricon group? You're working on that?
It's a pretty big area, so any evidence is pretty large. But I can't think of one that comes leaping to mind. That there was a big study just done at Verizon, which actually is much more in the pro control space, although against patching. And you should read, it's quite an interesting study to read all the way through. You know, I tend to use metrics in a couple of different ways. In general, I'd like to put a number on anything I can. It turns out to be pretty hard thing to do in a lot of areas.
Well, if you put one very large number, it takes care of all the possible information. You just put pi on there and it's all good.
Well, I'll tell you the one I use the most, which is, and it's the simplest, and that is usually when you start down the road of software security, and a lot of companies, as I'm sure you know, they're either in phase one or phase two of doing a lot of these things. And especially outside of financial services world, they're not necessarily at phase seven or eight of their software security, their road to nirvana.
Right. I'd have to agree with that.
And so a lot of the questions are, where do we start? And, you know, Pete Lindstrom told me a long time ago that an asset is worth no less than what you pay to own, operate, and maintain it. And I tend to like those numbers to break down the big projects in the company, and it may be fairly simplistic, but understand where the IT budget is going, forgetting about security, and trying to align your security spend with where IT is spending its money and really where the business is investing. And granted, an asset is hopefully worth more than what you spend on it if you're a business and you like making profits. But at least it gives you a floor value that says it's worth no less than this. And it's quite interesting if you break down the budgets of what companies spend on their network, you know, writing checks to Cisco and so on, what they spend on their hosts, what they spend on applications, and what they spend on data. They typically spend the most on applications. And then if you look at the security budget, they typically spend the most on network security and among the least on application
security. So that seems upside down.
So the conclusion is that the people in the IT, in the People's Republic of IT security, are possibly way, way smarter than the business. Or the other possible conclusion is that IT security is just totally out of whack and strategically misaligned with where the business is going. And I don't necessarily say that you should spend a dollar for dollar level of prioritization to what the business does. But I think in terms of risk management and focusing security around assets, you want to be aligned, prioritized the same way as the business,
right,
so that you're spending most of your money on software security.
I think the financial guys have really come around to that sort of thinking already. But like you said, many of them are on step seven. And so we have some more evangelism and just basic legwork to do in the rest of the community out there.
Yeah, and I think the paths diverge at a certain point. And I've spent I'm out here in Minneapolis. We have a couple of big banks here, but I spend a lot of time with insurance companies and manufacturers and non-financial services companies. And I think at a certain point they can learn a lot from what the financial services people are doing. But at a certain point the paths to software security nirvana diverge. Because in financial services, a lot of times you find very hard edges around certain parts of their business, particularly around transactional systems.
Because they're regulated.
because they're regulated and because the business, you know, a lot of times hasn't changed for a long time. And then you go to something like insurance. And insurance, their entire business is exception processing. So all the...
Yeah, that wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And all the boundaries are blurred. And so at a certain point, and I think that's partially why you might see role-based access control type thinking more prevalent in financial services and probably why it won't work as well outside of there. And so I think there's going to be some interesting for the 450 out of the Fortune 500 that are not in financial services, what kind of architectures will they drive?
Very interesting. Very
and good. I have sort of had this conversation with a number of software security vendors in the space saying, you know, what got you here to this point in maturity of the industry isn't going to get you there. You can't take the exact same model that a big bank uses and plunk it down at a big insurance company. Yeah, they're both $70 billion companies, but they're set up differently.
Yep, I found that when I was out there in Minnesota myself.
Well, then there's the whole Minnesota fact.
So, off the wall question, as a fly fisherman, how do you feel about wormers?
You know, I like fly fishing, you know, I'm not going to throw stones against the warmer people as long as they don't make big splashes and scare all the trout away and things like that.
Ooh.
You know.
So how about those of us who prefer to fish with explosions?
Yeah, that I would have a problem with. You know, then the availability of my fishing resource starts to dwindle pretty quickly.
Yes, but instant gratification is a good thing. One boom, many bodies.
Yeah. Well, I think the quote I like is calling fly fishing a hobby is like calling brain surgery a day job. So.
Thanks for your time. This has been fun.
Thanks a lot, Gary.
This has been a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. The September-October 2008 issue of IEEE S&P Magazine is a special issue dedicated to virtualization, co-edited by Sean Smith and Sam King. Silver Bullet is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine and syndicated by InformIT. Subscribe today at www.computer.org/security/BSI-sub. Show links, notes, and an online discussion can be found on the Silver Bullet webpage at www.cigital.com/silverbullet. This is Gary McGraw.